Gwynn and Chris can talk all they want about football, but they've never played it. They enlisted former Charger and Dolphin Greg Camarillo to provide us with insight from the gridiron. It's time to get the player perspective on 97.3 The Fan.
We are joined by Greg Camarillo. Greg, how are you today, brother?
Doing well, fellas.
Good day in the NFL. At least some good games to watch. Let's start with this Le'Veon Bell story. As a matter of fact, I'm actually tired of talking about it. We know the 13th is the deadline when he can show up. What's your take? You think he's going to show up at this point?
I do think he's going to show up, just because it's the only way for him to get out from under the Steelers. If he doesn't show up, then they still have rights to him. And the only way to get around that is to show up, unless they have some sort of under-the-table deal, which I don't think they do. He's got to show up, and he's got to be part of the team if he's going to move on next year.
Now, Greg, there's been reports that there's a loophole that they have found. Basically, they're not going to be able to put the same franchise tag. This will be the third one in their case, which means he has to get quarterback franchise money, which would kind of put him out of the price range from what I understand. Do you see this as a way to kind of circumvent the system a little bit?
I mean, you're not going to pay him quarterback money, right, at the running back position. It's just not. It doesn't make any sense, especially with Connor doing so well as his backup. But, if I'm the Steelers and I'm looking like I'm here to make a Super Bowl run, I need this guy out there, and I know Connor's been doing a great job, but Le'Veon Bell is, in my mind, the best back in the NFL when he's playing. You got to have that guy on your team if you're trying to win this Super Bowl.
Especially with everything else that's out there this year. Greg Camarillo's with us. We chat with him every other Monday about the NFL, former receiver for the Chargers and the Dolphins. And let's go with the Steelers and the rest of these offenses, Greg. I mean, you're sitting back, you're watching all this stuff unfold. Pittsburgh, absolutely unstoppable the other night, gets 52 points. Kansas City, unstoppable almost every week. Kind of had an off week for them, but still won comfortably. The Rams, they put up 40 every single game. The Saints put up 50 yesterday against. And then Buffalo even put up 41 points. Put them in the equation, but no. Let me ask you, whose offense do you like the best of those three or four? Not Buffalo, but of those big teams, whose offense do you like the best, and whose maybe has the potential to be the best come playoff time?
Oh, wow. All right, loaded question. All right, I personally like the Kansas City Chiefs offense the best for a couple reasons. The main reason is the explosiveness of Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt. Mm. It can literally be a two-yard reception that Tyreek Hill makes two guys miss, turns it into an 80-yard touchdown. The Rams have a couple guys that are explosive like that, but Tyreek Hill can take any play and turn it into a touchdown. Kareem Hunt, we've seen him take small little screens to the house. And then Patrick Mahomes has the ability to run. He has the ability to throw. He can throw on the run. I just think that offense is more dynamic. It has the big play capabilities more so than the others. The others have that ability, but I think it's just one notch above it. But when it's time to make that playoff run, this is a league that is about offense, but the team that's going to win is whatever team puts together a little bit of defense, and that's going to be a pass rush. The Steelers have shown that they're able to get to the passer, and that's the only way you're going to slow down some of these offenses is to get the quarterback on the ground. And right now the Steelers are looking like a more complete team.
That's interesting. I mean, because I think it's going to be a fantastic finish to this season one way or the other with all of these teams, but it does seem, Greg, that every year, like you said, these huge offenses finally get slowed down in the playoffs one way or another. You talked about the pass rush. Is there anything else that teams will do that will keep scores from being in the 50s once playoffs start?
Yeah, and it's not that time of year in San Diego, but for the rest of the country, it's getting colder, it's getting wetter, and As I look out my window and it's 80 degrees with no precipitation. But you take a team like the LA Rams and you have to go play somewhere cold, or you take a team like New Orleans that's used to playing indoors with no elements, no wind, nothing, and you have to go play somewhere where it's breezy, it's wet. It's hard to do. I played in Miami where I was used to a little bit of rain, a little bit of wind. Didn't affect me at all. And then I went to Minnesota where we literally practiced inside all day, played inside all day. And then you go somewhere outside, for example, we played in Chicago, and there's a breeze and it literally like messes up your chemistry. You're not used to the way the ball is coming from the quarterback. It's harder to catch a punt. And so when you're not used to the elements and you're suddenly thrust into them, it can affect your offense. It can affect your whole team.
Greg Camarillo joins us here on 97.3 The Fan. Gwen and Chris. Greg, ooh, we're going into Week 10. Who's your MVP right now?
Oh, I'm on the Mahomes bandwagon.
Man, you are heavy on the Mahomes bandwagon.
It's not a band, bad bandwagon to be on.
It's not a bad bandwagon to be on. But you know what? Todd Gurley is totally deserving of an MVP as well. I know it's harder for a running back to get it than it is a quarterback. And then you can't count out Drew Brees. You know, that offense is on fire, and it's him that's doing it. He's lost two receivers to IR, I think, maybe even three if you throw Dez Bryant in there. But the offense still ticks, and it's because he's the engine running it. But I like the excitement of having a young guy step in there and Mahomes just lighting the Chiefs up, lighting the scoreboard up all year.
Yeah, it's been fun look, you don't even have to be a Chiefs fan. I mean, it's been fun to watch them play, and it's been fun to watch a lot of these games. Greg Camarillo's with us. All right, Greg, it's that time. Patriots lose by 24 yesterday, so I guess we can write them off for good now again, right?
That's what happens when you go
Chiefs. Every time they lose a game, it's time to give up on them.
I am a documented Patriots hater, and so earlier in the year, when they lost a couple in a row, I was ready to announce that their dynasty was over. it's so great to watch them lose, but I guarantee they'll be right back at it next week. You know, you don't count them out for long. But I don't think we'll see Tom Brady catching any more passes after that beautiful display he put out there of stumbling.
What an athlete!
6 yards. Well, we said Tom Brady. An amazing athlete, but not athletic.
Good point.
Fair point.
Greg, Matt Barkley steps on the football field after 2 years of not playing at the NFL level and leads a Buffalo Bills team over the Jets. Not that the Jets are a great team or anything, but they certainly, going into that game, weren't favored to win it. Two-word question for you. Nathan Peterman.
Oh, man, two-word response. The worst. I feel bad ragging on the – well, no, I don't truly feel bad ragging about the guy. I shouldn't be so negative. But if I'm on the Buffalo Bills and you are going to announce that Nathan Peterman is our starting quarterback, you can't honestly look at me and say we are trying our best to win this game, because that's not the answer. You know, the dude throws so many interceptions, and it's just – he's just not an NFL quarterback. I'm convinced that he has some dirt on the owner, or you know, has a picture of the coach in a compromising position, because he is not good enough to be on the field. So, you know, the teammates got some new energy out there. Matt Barkley showed up. He made plays. The best way to support a new quarterback is with a run game, and they ran the ball solidly.
Yeah.
But anyone in Bills Nation has to be happy that Peterman's not out there.
Well, you know, the thing Tony brings up an interesting point. Matt Barkley made quarterbacking not look like it was that hard.
Right.
You know, I mean, we talk about it being the hardest thing in the world to do is be a quarterback. He doesn't play for 2 years and goes out there and plays well. One last thing for me, Greg. I don't know how much of the Rams-Seahawks game you got to see, but I saw enough to see my guy finally get off, and that's Rashad Penny, the Seahawks running back from San Diego State. You know, look, he's from Norwalk. So the LA area, I felt so good for him. He gets his first 100-yard game. He gets his first touchdown run. And his first touchdown run was a classic San Diego State run where he goes one way, then busts around the corner the other way. Look, it does take time for certain guys to find their groove. Maybe I hope that for him this is the beginning of something big.
Yeah, and I think it will be. I'm a huge fan of the guy. Just for years watching him, or not even years, because he was a backup for a while, but watching him do so well at San Diego State, but most importantly, the way he handled the media,
yeah.
He always said the right thing. He always had a good attitude. He got totally snubbed from anything Heisman, but handled it like a true professional. He's going to do just fine. He's built like an NFL running back, and I think that's what's going to be the difference. He's a big bruiser and dynamic. And, you know, if you look at it, Melvin Gordon didn't score a touchdown his entire rookie year. And
that's
now
right.
He's one of the premier running backs in the NFL. So I just think it'll take a little bit of a time for him to adjust. The Seahawks are figuring themselves out, but Rashad Penny's going to have a fine career in the NFL.
I got to sneak one last thing in because we're talking about running the football, and you are you're with the University of San Diego. They made national headlines this weekend. USD did, playing Davidson. I don't know if you heard about this, Tony.
Yeah, I haven't heard about this.
Davidson, listen to this, and I'm only bringing it up because it has a happy ending. Davidson rushed against USD for 789 yards the other day.
That's just rushing yards?
Just rushing. And USD won the game.
Oh my God.
Right, Greg?
Yep.
What in the world happened out there? That's an unbelievable story.
Yes. You can measure their rushing yards in miles. That's how far it is. My Torero's got it done. They Anthony Lawrence, the quarterback, is the career passing yards leader at USD, so you can obviously trust him with the ball. Michael Bandy, our breakout receiver from the year, went for 324 yards on 10 catches. So he just had a monster day. I don't even think I had 324 yards my entire senior season in college.
What a game. It was just fun.
You know, it's fun to watch offense rule the game, but also for a team to come back and break a solid lead in such an exciting fashion. The Toreros are handling business.
That was a great win. Great story. I was so happy to hear that they won because the first thing I heard was that Davidson got all that yardage, and I was like, oh my God, I don't want to even see the score of the game. But
yeah,
it turned out they end up winning. All right, Greg, thanks as always. Great stuff. Always fun. We'll catch up to you in a couple weeks.
No, I appreciate it, fellas.
Always great talking NFL with Greg Camarillo. It was a crazy NFL weekend. But while all that was going on, Tony Gwynn Jr., a huge weekend in the NBA. You came in with a big smile on your face. I didn't have to even look at the results. I figured the Lakers won twice. Am I correct?
They did. They won twice.
And they were nice. I mean, a win at Sacramento now actually counts.
It means something a little bit more.
It counts. And the Hawk game actually would concern me a little bit more because Atlanta's not very good. But hey, the thing I like about what's happened with the Lakers is since they got Tyson Chandler, he has given them exactly what you said that he would give them.
A rim protector. I mean, that's what he's doing. I mean,
and that's how they won the game last night.
They won the game like that last night. I'm not as concerned. Yes, Atlanta should not be. Then they were down 15 at one point.
Yeah.
But that's a back end of a back-to-back games for the Lakers, so I'll give them a pass. The night before, you're taking on the Kings, who, you know, in the past, that wouldn't mean anything. But
no,
as
but
you
they're
said,
good now.
7-6.
Mm-hmm.
They lead the league in offensive efficiency. They get up and down the court faster than anybody. And so, knowing the Lakers going into that game, you would think that would give them a lot of trouble. They hold them to 86 points. To me, the defense is the thing that stood out the last two games, and it's no coincidence that it all started once Tyson Chandler becomes a... And so, listen, JaVale McGee has been great for the Lakers, but when he comes out the game, the Lakers, I would guess, are the smallest team in the NBA with LeBron James being the tallest player on the court most of the time.
Right, but with Tyson Chandler now, they have something they can go to defensively, and when you've got a rim protector, that makes all the other four defenders better.
Right, because now they can play more aggressive on the perimeter.
People don't get that, but when you've got somebody at the rim, you can guard your guy a whole lot better,
because
there's nothing more depressing as a defender in not just the NBA, but any
time,
even in a pickup game, but to go out and have some guy blow right by you and go in for a layup,
an easy
or in
layup.
The NBA
uncontested layup,
or in the NBA a dunk. But if you got Tyson Chandler behind you, nobody notices it because they don't get that layup, and he blocks the shot. I mean, right at the end, he must have got a fingernail on that ball.
That's what he said. He said he originally thought that Young was going to take the step back three. He said he looked at the clock, and as Trey started coming, he knew he didn't have time to pass, so he sold out, and he caught it right at the apex.
Just caught it, and they had a great angle of it.
They did.
From down the other end of the court, Do you think it would have gone in? That's the question.
I think it would have gone in.
It looked like it was teardropping right toward the hoop, and Chandler got a piece of it. So the Lakers, look, you've always given me a hard time about not being patient. I'm going to be patient with the Lakers, but for them to go 7-6, that's a good deal for them.
2-5
to start
the season?
It's not like it's the end of the year. It's not like they just won the NBA title. Philadelphia may have just won the NBA title, but not the Lakers.
Ooh, yeah.
How about that move? Jimmy Butler goes to the 76ers. And I know, let's just get this out of the way. The 76ers gave up a lot, all right? They gave up two starters. They gave up draft picks. But you know what's funny? In about a month's time, you won't remember any of the guys that Philadelphia gave up in that trade, right?
No. Well, unless Minnesota ends up playing pretty well.
Okay.
Only in that way will you remember.
But, I think it's Covington and
Saric.
These guys are players. They're not bad players, but they're just players.
They were starters on this Philadelphia team last year.
But now Philadelphia has Jimmy Butler, and now they have to win an NBA title, they say you need three, at least three, and they've got the three now. They've got Ben Simmons, they've got Butler, they've got Joel Embiid, they've got an inside guy, they've got an outside guy, they got a slasher. Look, Philadelphia to me becomes the number one seed in the East.
Really?
I think they pass Boston right now. I have to see how it all comes together, but I think Butler, boy, it's going to be, I mean, look at, right now it's interesting. The Celtics are only 7-6 and Philadelphia is only 8-6. So neither of them have gotten off to the teams that's gotten off to the hot starts are Milwaukee and Toronto.
Right.
So all of a sudden the East looks like it's pretty decent.
The East is a lot stronger now with Butler being over there, right?
Yes.
But to me, Philly's got to go through not only the Celtics, Toronto's no joke now with Kawhi over there. And Milwaukee looks like a really good team in the Eastern Conference.
You remember what I said last week? I said, I don't want to really say this, but maybe the East is sneaking up on the West, and I have to act begrudgingly say that it might be.
At least at the top. You know, I still think the East is pretty top heavy with those four teams. You look over at the Western Conference, you got about 10 teams, 11 teams, all playing over 500 right now. So it's still top to bottom in the West, but you're right. That top four or five in the East is no joke. I'm equally as interested, though, to see what happens in Minnesota. Because you look at the numbers of Wiggins and Towns when they're on the court with Butler, they're about both 8-9 points less per game than when them off the court. That being said, this was the same team we saw go from a 3 seed when Jimmy Butler got hurt to all the way to an 8 seed. They only got the 8 seed because Jimmy Butler came back and played.
Yeah, Wiggins and Towns will probably score a whole bunch more points. I have no doubt that they'll score more points. So if you have them in your fantasy basketball league, you're pleased with this trade. But if you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, your team just got worse.
Your team just got worse.
There's no other way to look at it. And Butler is not only, I think, he's become a great offensive weapon, especially a fourth quarter scorer, but he is the kind of guy that you can stick on the other player's best player. He can guard Kyrie Irving for a whole game. I'm not saying he's going to shut him out, but he's going to make Kyrie Irving earn his points. He can help on Giannis. He can go help when they play Kawhi Leonard.
That's where
Jimmy Butler makes Philadelphia fantastic in my mind.
He makes them because you know who that job, it was either Covington's job last year or it was Ben Simmons' job to chase around the best guy. But at this point, you can throw Jimmy Butler on there and you know he's built for it. He relishes
lives for that
challenge. So, back over to the Minnesota side, you wonder at the end of the day, will Jimmy Butler be proved right when it's all said and done?
Yes, he will be proved right. Did he go about it all correctly?
No.
Probably not.
I think he would tell you that.
But did he end up getting what he wanted?
Yes, he did.
Absolutely. I mean, I am honestly and excited about the potential of a Philadelphia Golden State final. It's not guaranteed, but I think Butler makes Philly the team to beat. Now, here's the interesting thing in the NBA right now. ESPN... And I honestly think that once in a while these guys sit around and say, hey, let's just do something stupid so that everyone will talk about it.
Right.
So today they came out with their new power rankings.
I'm looking at it right now.
Did you see who's number one in the NBA in the power rankings?
I do.
I don't care if Toronto was 31-0. They're still not ahead of Golden State in a power ranking. You can't possibly put them ahead. If Golden State played Toronto right now in the NBA Finals, who'd be favored?
Oh, Golden State.
Right. So they should still be number one. But if you look at the ESPN rankings right now, Toronto's on top. So
I think it's just based off the week, though, and how they did.
Nah, it's a bunch of bull. It's a bunch of bull. It's on there. It's on there just to try and get a little conversation started. Golden State is still the team to beat, but Toronto and Milwaukee, they have moved up the list. In fact, Philadelphia is number 7 right now in the power rankings, but you give Jimmy Butler a couple of weeks, a month or so, I really think that's going to be a great team.
The top 10 kind of explains you that the East has gotten better, because you look through the top 10 last year, you would be lucky to find two teams. You're only going to find two teams in the top 10 in most power rankings. Now you look at it, you got Milwaukee in there.
Milwaukee's good.
You've got Boston, you've got Philly, you've got Indiana. Those are the top 10, and then you got Toronto. Those are 4 out of the top 10 are coming from the East, yep, according to the power rankings of ESPN.
Yeah, the East has gotten a lot better. Now, there's one team out there in the NBA that doesn't know it yet, but they're going to get worse soon. I don't know which team it is, but the Houston Rockets, it looks like, are going to part with Carmelo Anthony.
So you're saying whoever signs Carmelo
Anthony? That's what I'm saying. Exactly. So why don't you call your friends with the Lakers? Don't let them even think about doing something like that.
I told you,
Carmelo Anthony, he's not a cancer. He's not a terrible guy. He's just not a winning basketball player. And Houston has found that out very quickly.
I think Carmelo has to be on a specific type team in order for him to be productive. And he's going to have to come off the bench. I think wherever he goes, unless it's to the league's worst team, one of the worst teams in the league,
right,
it's the only way he's going to start. If he goes to any other team that is playoff contending team,
he's on a contending team,
he's going to come off the bench.
He's going to have to play a role, but I don't see Carmelo Anthony ever being able to play a role of any kind. That's my problem.
I actually think he would be an okay fit for the Lakers.
Oh, my God.
I do.
Only because,
listen, the Rockets played no defense as it is. So you can't add another dude who's going to play, not only not be as efficient on offense as the rest, but now he's going to play no D as well. At least the Lakers have some bodies that actually play D and kind of can cover up for him. So if it's actually a direction they're going, I don't think so.
All right.
But we'll I think the Lakers would be one of those teams that he wouldn't be a detriment to.
I don't like to root against guys, but when I come out at the beginning of the season and I say personally, Houston getting Carmelo Anthony is the dumbest move of the year, and then about a month into the season, they even agree with
me. They acknowledge it.
I feel like, you know, for once I got one right. Real quick, NCAA college basketball, before we get to the top of the hour, they got it right. They put Duke number 1 this week after starting the season number 4.
That's painfully obvious.
You have to put them number 1 after that win over Kentucky, and the Aztecs are now a week away from playing them. And I went back in the books, Tony. 1980. Now, this is way pre Tony Gwynn Jr., but it's not pre Tony Gwynn Sr.
Tony Gwynn was there.
Tony Gwynn Sr. was on the court, point guard, starting for San Diego State basketball. I believe it's the last time they played a number one team in the nation. DePaul, with Mark Aguirre and Terry Cummings, came to San Diego for something called the Cabrillo Classic. And those two guys led number one ranked DePaul against your dad and the Aztecs. And it wasn't a bad game. I think they lost by 15 or something like that. But I don't know that they've ever played a number one in the country team since then.
I do remember my dad talking about that story. Playing against DePaul.
Yeah.
Listen, there's no doubt about it. It's going to be a monumental challenge.
It's going to be fun
for the Aztecs. But listen, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. I think. I'm hopeful that they can pull off a huge upset.
Let's just think this through for just a half a second. Not only are they going to play Duke in the first round, but just let's say that it works out. Gonzaga is waiting on the other side of that Maui Invitational bracket. Number 3 in the nation. Yeah. And then when the season starts, do you know that Nevada is number 6 in the nation right now?
No,
Nevada.
I did not.
From their conference, the Mountain West Conference, Nevada's number 6.
That sets up good for the Aztecs.
The Aztecs have a chance to really knock off some big name clubs along the way this year. So we'll see how it all turns out. Basketball. Aztecs play their next game against Texas Southern Wednesday night before they head over to Maui. All right, that's it. Top of the hour. When we come back, we will get into our Big 5 still ahead as we roll on this Monday. And, of course, Monday Night Football coming up between the Giants and the Niners. Man, what a barn burner. corner. That ought to be. I'm Chris Ella.
I'm Tony Gwynn Jr.
This is Gwynn and Chris.
San Diego's new home for Padres baseball, 97.3.
Now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwynn and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
Let's go right to it, Thomas.
Number five.
The Bucks, they've had a rough couple weeks, and it was revealed yesterday that Bucks head coach Dirk Cutter took back play calling duties on the offense. That offense scored 3 points and had a really tough time in the red zone. Fitzmagic, it's safe to say, is gone. Fitzmagic, you know.
You know, I thought we were going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, and I was wondering, why is he talking about the Bucks struggling? They're having a great year.
Oh, no, not the Milwaukee. Sorry, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Buccaneers.
I have figured that out now.
Oh, okay.
It took me a moment.
Radio 101 probably should say who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, now people are thinking that Dirk Cutter is getting paranoid that he's going to lose his job, thus making this decision to change it up in Week 10. Expectations were high last year and just as high this year, maybe even higher. So, Chris, let's start with you. Does Dirk Cutter finish the year as head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I'm going to say that he shouldn't even have started the year as the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, they're coming off an absolutely awful season. I don't know what he did last year to keep the job. You know, and he caught a little lightning in the bottle at the beginning of this season with Fitzmagic, but you knew that wasn't going to last. And then when Jameis Winston struggles a little bit, he immediately presses the panic button. I think you get yourself into trouble as a coach. Very few teams, Tony, I think, can be successful going back and forth at quarterback. Your team needs to know who the leader is.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be Fitzpatrick, got to go with him. It's going to be Winston, you got to go with him. And Dirk Cutter got caught in the middle, and I don't think he'll make it through the season.
Tony, do you think Dirk Cutter, the head coach of the Bucks, will make it through the season?
Oh, wow. I think he'll make it through. Was it what they call it? Black Monday? Is that what they call
it? Right, yeah. The day after
he'll
the season.
He'll be a casualty on Black Monday. Listen, Chris makes a really good point. I can't think of any successful teams in the NFL that go back and forth with the quarterback position. But really, the only only teams that do that are teams that stink.
Yeah.
The Bucks stink. Their head coach probably is paranoid. He's probably going to lose his job at the end of the year, so he's going to do whatever it takes for his team to get wins so he can try to salvage that, but I think that ship has sailed.
The good thing for Dirk Cutter is if he makes it to Black Monday, he'll have company.
Because there are
a lot of guys right now that are on their way out. What, the Cincinnati coach lost his job, defensive coordinator. You haven't got to that one yet?
Number four.
The Bengals started the year as the Bengals and now have faded away back to the Bungles. My cousin who lives in Cincinnati, massive Bengals fan, he called me last night because he is furious and he wanted someone in sports radio to talk about Marvin Lewis. So he is so mad that because they were duped again. Fans of the Bengals were duped by Marvin Lewis, and he's been there for 16 seasons, never won a playoff game, and the Bengals are teetering on not making the playoffs again. They had 51 points put up on them yesterday by the Saints and Drew Brees, and the defensive coordinator Terrell Austin was fired by Marvin Lewis and the organization. So Tony, you're up first. Do you think Marvin Lewis should be the one to go and not the defensive coordinator?
Not right now. He shouldn't be the one to go. I mean, they had the opportunity to fire him before the season started. They elected not to do it. I think he's bought himself some time with the start that they have. Now, I know they got beat. They got beat by, you could argue, the best team in football right now in the Saints, and definitely the best offense in football. So, listen, this is kind of how it works in sports, right? There's got to be some scapegoat. He's not going to fire himself.
No.
So, therefore, the defensive coordinator who was responsible for the 51 points that were put up on him,
Terrell Austin,
he goes out.
Yeah. This sounds very much like one of those after the game somebody pulled Marvin Lewis aside and said, either you fire Terrell Austin or we're firing you.
100%.
I don't think there was any question that that's how this worked. I always stick up for Marvin Lewis. I am, first of all, it's probably because I'm not a Bengals fan. If I were, I'd probably hate him by now. But I take you back to the year 2000 when he was the defensive coordinator of the great Baltimore Ravens defense.
Right.
And he came on our program every week while they made that Super Bowl run. I don't remember all the details, but
I was
he
like,
came
wait,
on.
That's random.
It was kind of a random interview, but they won, and he demanded to come on our show every
week.
So he's
a superstitious guy.
Until they won the Super Bowl. So I've always loved Marvin Lewis just because he did that. So here's how I stick up for him. They've lost three of their last four games. Offensively or defensively, they were just blasted. But they were blasted by the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Saints.
Right.
I mean, these are not bad teams.
They're really good teams.
Now,
actually,
the one that concerns me is they beat the Buccaneers 37-34. So they obviously have some problems on that side of the football right now. And Marvin Lewis is going to have to get it squared away. He's a very smart defensive guy. I think he's got to hire somebody that he can control and he can run things for a while, because they got Baltimore and Cleveland and Denver and coming up, so they got a chance to turn it back around.
You're right. I mean, it's been bad since I lived in Cincinnati in 2010. People were trying to get rid of Marvin Lewis, and he just continues to find himself with a job. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
All right.
Number three.
It's that time of the year. We're going to talk about another head coach who's on the hot seat. And former New York Jets head coach Rex Ryan had some pretty scathing things to say about current Jets head coach Todd Bowles. And Rex Ryan said that yesterday's 41-10 home loss to the Bills may be the worst loss in Jets history. Now everyone's asking the Todd Bowles question, is he under fire? Is he going to be on the hot seat? Is he going to get fired before the end of the year? But that's not my question, because he has a rookie quarterback in Sam Darnold who was out with a foot injury. They had to start 39-year-old Josh McCown. So, Chris, the question is, how long does a rookie quarterback buy a head coach?
He's going to buy him till the end of the season, and then he'll get fired on Black Monday. We already talked about the fact that Dirk Koetter's going to have some company. Yeah, that was one of the worst losses in Jets history, just because of the way it came down. Keep in mind, Buffalo had scored 33 points in four games total and then got 31 points in the first half. So that's pathetic. But I also don't blame it 100% on Todd Bowles. Tony, every team, I think, in the NFL does not pay attention to the position of backup quarterback. And we can run down a whole list of backup quarterbacks that looked terrible yesterday even. But, you know, Sam Darnold is coming along. I think he's had some good games, some bad games, which is what I expect. But Josh McCown was the only thing he had to could go to yesterday, and we see what happens even against Buffalo.
Tony, what do you think? Do you think that how long does a rookie quarterback buy Todd Bowles?
I don't know. It's the goalposts move on this all the time. Sometimes it's a year, sometimes it's three. Who knows? This is Todd Bowles' second year as head coach, I believe, for the Jets.
Yes.
Third year. Okay, so
I think they had one overachieving year.
There you go. First year they overachieved. Right, last year they kind of were they were supposed to be, and now we sit here with another rookie quarterback. This will probably be a Black Monday casualty.
It'll probably be a Black Monday casualty, but I think the Jets will in a lot of ways regret it, because that means Sam Darnold has to learn a new coach and a new system, and he kind of starts all over again. So this is where the Jets have to look in the mirror and maybe block out all the noise. I mean, the noise is going to be deafening in New York after that game yesterday, but it might not be a smart move to get rid of him so quickly.
I agree with that. That's what I was going to say, is the fact that he has a rookie quarterback now. He has spent 2 years without a quarterback, really, what they thought was a quarterback. And now he has a rookie. He's got to mold him a little bit. He may not get the opportunity to see him to actually finish the molding job, but this is not all on Todd Bowles.
Todd Bowles is emotionless, too.
You don't know that. He's emotionless on the sidelines.
Yeah, on the sidelines.
That was a bad performance by an NFL team that honestly, I think, overlooked their opponent, which you don't normally see happen in the NFL.
See, that's a media thing right there. See, right? He doesn't have any emotion, and he has too much emotion over there. He's yelling over there.
I would rather have more emotion.
Oh, if he was yelling and screaming, you'd be, he's out of control.
He's losing his mind over there.
I would never flip-flop like that.
That's true. Not you.
Never.
Number two.
The Falcons. Well, let's go to another serious thing going on. The Falcons lost to the Cleveland Browns yesterday, and it shocked many around the league because of how flat the Falcons played. I watched this game yesterday. It looked like the Falcons didn't even show up. So this morning on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, linebacker Devondre Campbell said that the Falcons may have overlooked the Browns, or at least insinuated it, because he said, quote, "I think it was more of an energy thing, you know, like we didn't come out and play today the way we've been playing the past couple weeks." So, I'm going to start with you, Tony. Who's most, if you were the owner, Arthur Blank, which would you be most concerned with? The fact that a player was saying this, or that the coaching staff allowed it?
Oh.
You don't like to hear this either way.
I think
these are the things you don't like to hear.
Yeah, I think either way. If you're the owner at this point, I think you hear that, and you take it for what the words say. You know, we probably overlooked the Browns thinking we were going to come in and just beat on them because they're at the bottom of the pool here. But this is NFL, though. At some point, you gotta know, regardless of who you're playing. We already saw the Vikings fall victim to this earlier when they played the Bills. So if you're the ownership, I don't know if I'm too concerned about just this one game, ultimately.
I don't think the Falcons really have a very good team this year. I just think in general, they've gone backwards. Now, 2 years ago, they were in the Super Bowl. Last year, remember now, they beat the Rams in a playoff game. That's how, I mean, they were still that good last year. But I don't think they're very good this year. If you look at them, they've lost to every team that's decent. They put together a three-game winning streak over the Bucks, the Giants, and the Redskins. Not exactly a murderer's row. So I just don't think it's as good of a Falcon team as it's been the last couple of years. I hope for Atlanta's sake they don't overreact and say, well, it's time to get Dan Quinn out and move him along. I mean, the guy was just in the Super Bowl right. A couple of years ago. So the Falcons need to – what the owner needs to do is bring the general manager in and say, hey, how do we get back to where we were? We don't have enough talent on this football team. The other thing doesn't concern me so much. I think it was just an answer to a question as to how you could lose to the Browns. Mm. I really don't know that the Falcons didn't show up. I watched a lot of the game too, Scraby, and they had about 11 plays that they ran from the Cleveland 1 yard line.
That's
and
never
didn't
good.
Score on any of them. They kept, I mean, they were throwing.
It's never good.
They kept knocking on the door and then getting turned away. It was one of those days for Atlanta, but I just don't think Atlanta's as good as, you know, they have been in the last couple of years. That's all.
I really wish all owners would take a page, excuse me, out of the Rooney's playbook.
You getting choked up over there?
No, I'm just.
No, he's just saying just something
too
important.
There's too much. There's just too much, you know, microwavable success. Like,
yeah.
It just generally, to build a championship franchise, it just generally doesn't happen overnight.
Because if everybody else had their way, you're talking about the Rooney playbook, which is Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin would have been fired a month and a half ago.
Man.
Look where they are now.
Number one.
And the number one story of the weekend is that the Aztecs football team lost to the UNLV Rebels Saturday night at home, 27-24. And it probably shouldn't have even been that close because the Rebels came into the game 2-7, hadn't won a Mountain West title game yet. My question is pretty simple. Chris, is this the worst loss in Rocky Long history at San Diego State?
Well, it certainly felt like it if you watched it, and I did, and I didn't enjoy it.
It's brutal.
Any part of it. They got outplayed from the opening kickoff. It was not an upset in the sense
Didn't I
that,
say trap game?
Well, I don't buy that crap. What I buy is the fact I don't buy it. I don't think Rocky Long would allow his team to be trapped, but they just got outplayed. UNLV was physically knocking the crap out of the Aztecs, and they jumped to a lead. The Aztecs turned the ball over, got behind, and look, they've been playing with fire for a month and a half now, and they got burned finally. I mean, they kept surviving the San Jose State game. They survived
New Mexico
game. I mean, these are games that should have never been close, so it didn't shock me that eventually you keep playing like this, you're going to lose a game. But is it the worst loss in the Rocky Long era? The answer is no. The worst loss in the Rocky Long era was probably a season-opening loss to Eastern Illinois in 2013. They were a Division FCS school.
Mm.
You know who their quarterback was?
Was it Jimmy G?
Jimmy G, yeah. Jimmy G came in here and
no
just,
wonder why they lost.
Yeah, he blew them out. But that season ended up with a bowl win. Also in 2015 and 16, they lost back-to-back years to South Alabama.
Yes, that sure did.
And both of those years ended in a bowl win. So I'm not saying this year ends in a bowl win, but I'm saying this isn't the worst loss, and Rocky Long has a way of using these kinds of bad defeats to get his team turned back around.
Tony?
What he said, basically. I mean, this isn't their worst loss. The fact that the Aztecs got out-physical.
They did.
I mean, the fact that happened.
They probably wouldn't want to admit it, but they had guys getting flattened on the field.
That's been a staple of this program
right.
since Rocky's taken over. You know, at the very least, the physicality part is not an issue.
UNLV had a safety who came up and smashed.
They got dominated.
Ryan Agnew right in the face with a forearm.
Yeah.
It would have been a suspension in the NFL. in college, they let it go, number one. But number two, no Aztec came to Ryan Agnew's defense.
I saw that too.
And I don't like that.
Yeah.
He got hammered. The guy hit him with a forearm shiv right in the helmet. No call. But I want my teammates coming to my to my quarterback's defense. That shows me that I got a together club. And I didn't see that Saturday night. I mean, that bothered me.
We heard from Rocky a couple weeks ago when he was talking about one of the victories. I think it was against New Mexico.
Yeah,
he mentioned the fact that listen, this is who we are. Like we don't execute perfectly all the time, and we find ways to win games. To me, that sounds like a coach that is at peace with the fact that his team is maybe not up to the standards that they usually have been over the last couple of years.
I don't understand why he's not sticking with one quarterback, but we can get into that another time.
That is a little weird.
For tomorrow, I'm going to the press conference tomorrow, and it's going to get awkward.
Oh, my goodness. Because
I'm
going to
ask him.
And Rocky tomorrow?
I'm going to ask him about sticking with one quarterback, and I'm probably going to get banned from the room forever.
You might.
You might just get banned from the room forever anyway.
From Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
And there is your Big Five, and of course, Scraby has put me in a great mood now by finishing it off with the San Diego State loss. Why do you do this? I mean, you know, I try to start my week off on a bright note. I'm happy. I'm feeling good. I'm healthy.
He's
confident.
Selfish. He's only thinking about his questions. He's not thinking about how you and I are going to feel about this question.
I honestly think he sat there and went, "What question could I make number one to upset Chris and Tony the most?" So I think I'll ask him about the Aztecs.
He has the nerve to make it the last question too.
Yeah. Well, I hope Rocky tears him up tomorrow at the press conference. Tears you up.
Can you videotape it?
I'm actually a little scared.
Hey, look, you got to ask tough questions after a loss like that, though. I think other people will ask some tough questions also. All right. Coming up, it's Monday Night Football shortly. The Giants and the 49ers were back. One final segment to set you up for kickoff right here. I'm Chris Ello.
I'm Tony Gwynn Jr.
And this is Gwynn and Chris.
San Diego's only FM sports station, 97.3 The Fan.